And Alan from Scotland has donated $100 for Don Nance's product. And Don Nance's product is the gift that's been given for the raffle today. Hello, who has just called in and tell us who you are and where you're from?
Yeah, this is Jim from New York City.
G'day, Jim from New York City. I love that city. Who else we got? Another anonymous listener. So what I was saying is that our raffle prize this morning, this afternoon for you guys, is $100 worth of Don Nance's product, which was donated by Alan of Scotland, who took Don Nance's product and just loved it so much that he wanted to give it as a gift for our live alchemy raffle. And I was hoping that we might have Don to talk a little bit about his product, but I haven't been able to get a peep out of Don either today. Unless, Don, unless you're on, that silence indicates that I'm not on, I would think. Dale, do you have the ability and the ease and grace to be able to pull the electronic number out of a hat and we'll find out who's won the raffle?
I am working on it as we speak. So entertain yourself for a minute.
Okay. So one of the courses that I want to be able to do in the next little while, either this month or next month.
This line is now muted.
But I want to invite you to also, Lou, is the call I'm naming Formless and Manifestation. And what I've discovered is that Formless has extraordinary capacity, seemingly, to increase the speed of manifestation of things. And we have got lots of stories about that. And so I wanted to have one call that's just on that topic from people who have noticed a huge increase in the manifestation in their lives of being, doing, and having in their life. Sometimes you want to be something and it manifests. Sometimes you want to do something, it manifests. Sometimes you want to have something and it manifests. Well, you know, one of the things that initially got my attention when I started researching the whole Ormus thing was the power of manifestation. And so I'd love to do that call this month or next month. If you're into it, Lou, are you okay about that, being a part of that?
You talking to who?
This line is now muted.
Yes, I'm interested.
Right. Excellent. Because you had a really good story, and so listen, why don't you give me your phone number so I can ring you?
Okay, the number is 852-9033-7037.
So did you say 852-9033-7037?
852-9033-7037.
Yes, that's it. And Lou Harris, are you still on the line?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, would you give me your phone number, please?
Yep.
9582. Okay, I'll give you a bell and we'll organize it. So, Barry, are you ready with the strong winner for this month.
Almost.
Anyone else who just came on, would you like to say who you are and where you're from?
Hi, this is Joe from Illinois.
Hey, Joe from Illinois.
How you doing, mate?
Doing great, thanks, man. Welcome to the call. Who else we just got?
Hi, Dennis. This is Ron in Michigan.
Did you say Ron?
Lon, L-O-N.
Lon?
Yeah.
Okay, Lon. Fabulous. Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah, how do you mute?
You can hit star 6 or mute
okay.
Your N.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
And then, if you want to test it, just say test, and if it doesn't come across the call, you've successfully muted yourself.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm not going to do an auto-mute, because I just want people to be able to speak up if they want to. Now, if you mute yourself and then you want to ask any questions, just hit star 6 again, and that'll unmute you. There he is, preoccupied.
I'll receive the card for him.
So, Eric can come back to that.
While we're waiting, this is Sam from Oklahoma.
Hi there, who is that again?
Timothy in Oklahoma.
G'day, good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good evening.
To you, that'll be early evening, right?
Yeah, 5.
Well, for Sigberto is up just before 6 a.m. to take this call. And so the early bird's been getting a worm for Sigberto. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from him later in the call.
Hello?
Anyone else who has come on the call hasn't said hello yet?
Hello?
Hi.
No one.
Is anybody there?
Who's willing to say hello?
I can hear you, but I'm not sure that Dennis can hear you.
Barry, are you ready with the raffle winner?
Yes. The voice is very tame.
Thank you. Well, listen, what I'd like to do, perhaps we can announce the raffle when Barry's willing to...
The raffle winner, did you hear me say the raffle winner?
Yeah, you're speaking louder.
Oh, great. Whoever that was, you're coming in clear.
Dennis, can you hear me?
One of them was this man called Doug Ford. So I rang Doug, and Doug said to me about 3 times, said, oh, I don't have anything to say. And what I found was, even as Doug did say, got my attention completely. And now, finally, we get
speaking right now.
Doug as a guest on our call.
Hopefully it's not Doug.
And what I'd like you to do is just
Doug?
Say,
no, hopefully it's not.
Someone with an Australian accent.
My Doug.
Dennis is speaking right now, and he can't hear us.
I don't know a hell of a lot about anything, but the longer I go, the worse it gets.
That's Doug.
What I'd like you to do, please, is tell us a few stories about the results that you have had with your product and why do you think that's so, and we'll take it from there.
Well, I asked several people that I have given the product to, and unanimously, they basically tell that they just seem to feel more at ease, they feel more secure, they're not uptight, things don't bother them, and it's just more or less a subtle effect that it has. But in the long run, that little subtle effect seems to allow them to focus very intently on what they're doing. They say they complete their tasks a lot more efficiently. They don't get distracted, they don't run in circles, they don't get frustrated, they don't get mad. And I guess when we feel good, we're pretty tolerant. Maybe I wish I could give it to the world right now.
Sounds like it cures AIDS.
I think the world needs a big enema of it, actually.
One of the things I've found in common with the various alchemists that are talking on this call have all felt exactly the same, Doug. Is that not the case for you?
I think that's pretty much the case. It doesn't always affect everybody the same way, but I think over time it does have a very calming, gentleizing effect on a human. My experience is that for some people, the first time they take one of these substances, it may actually make them a bit more antsy. They get a bit more emotional sometimes. But after a while, after your system sorts out, then it does have a general conscious raising effect, and also better concentration, a general feeling of peace and good fortune about yourself.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Nick DC.
Is there any specific stories that you'd like to tell about people having any specific health benefits that you can put your finger on?
Well, the way we just discovered it is that we were working in the lab and the stuff kept plugging up all my filters. And I kept chucking it out as far as I could throw, but I cut my hand really bad. It was on the, between the thumb and the index finger. And I got some of this stuff on it, and it healed within a matter of days, something that would usually take a couple of weeks to knit up. And that's what kind of got our attention. And generally, I've never used it for that kind of an effect, but this was the gel that was coming out of the precipitate before I dried it. And, before I knew what it was, and the fact that it healed up so fast got my partner's attention. And I think that's probably where it started. And then I had a friend of mine that I gave it to that was diagnosed terminally ill with cancer, and he was only supposed to last a couple of months, and 18 years later he finally died of a stroke, but he was a chain smoker. But he swore by it, and I just gave it to him because he was a friend. And he was quite a brilliant man. He had worked on the atomic bomb when he was 16 years old as a mathematician. So he's the one probably that brought it to my attention the most.
That's quite a strong story.
Well, the fact that he was willing to try it without, he said, I'm going to die anyway, just throw me as mad as anything, so send me some more. You know? And it did. It kept him going for 18 years.
That sounds like a bit of a short story that happened to John Lennon. What do you know about John Lance's story, Doug?
I don't know. What he told me was that he had colon cancer, and but his was supplied by the Essene, so I don't know. I don't know any of the particulars about it.
Now, in our conversation, you said that you and the Essene had a connection way back. What can you tell us about that?
Well, we worked together quite a bit, and off and on, but he had his projects and I had my projects. He would help me and I'd help him. But we never got into each other's projects. I work mostly construction. I'm a welder and a mechanic, and I worked, I've got 35 years in the operating engineers and about 9 years in the boilermakers. And I worked on plants and did cavitation repair on Grand Coulee Dam. And so I observed metal and the workings of metal and what happens to metal and the peculiarities. It's really quite unusual. But it's hard to explain, and most of the engineers and whatnot that were working with us had a completely different idea on things.
So when you're talking about metal to me, Doug, you talked about the energy of metal.
Right, they're different ionization points and then their bonding, which most of the common chemistry doesn't even teach anything about interstitial bonding, and anything from the ferrous metal of iron on up has interstitial bonding, and so then it can tag on all kinds of different elements and different ionization points, and I think that's where what you guys call ormus, I think that's where the energy effect is coming from. The ormus is from the release after these bonds are broken. But that's just my idea.
Well, I think that the various more scientifically inclined members of the ormus community would love to have a conversation with you about that. I bet Steve Berger would probably even have a participation about that. What are you going to say about that part of your research, Berger, in terms of the energy of different metals?
Well, certainly they have different metals. My question to Doug would be, is he saying that this substance, which we call ormus, does it act similarly to some kind of a welding flux to help bind different metals together?
No, not at all, because those are pure metals, and these are different types of molecular structures. They're real complex. When they break down, they release energy. And a weld is basically attempting to place one metal or one alloy of a metal into a welded position. And these salts have a vast amount of different elements. And I think that's what the body picks and chooses to heal itself. Because it needs the different elements to be the catalyst.
Well, I would be interested to know the process that you have derived to get this ormus, or what you call the basalt, out of the black sand. Can you tell us something about that?
No. I've got 30 years in it. Are you kidding me?
Well, okay.
I mean,
it's a trade secret.
Basically, you guys know that I'm bringing it down through a salt. That's what everybody else is doing too. I sell, basically the grinding is important, and so is the process that I, scurrying system that I use. But other than that, I can't really get into it because, man, I'm still perfecting it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
want
to mislead somebody.
Yeah, well, I can understand. I'm not expert trade secrets. I mean, I live in the most densely populated metropolitan area on Earth, and we don't have any forests. You know, I long to see a tree once in a while, so it's not like we can go out and find the materials here to do anything.
Yeah, well, we don't have any trees where I live here either, hardly. This is pretty desert country in eastern Washington. We're not in Seattle.
Oh, you're in eastern Washington.
Yeah, the guys come over here from Seattle, and if they're on, they come over here to dry out.
Yeah.
So, Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about that area that you're in, and why it is that you access the sand from there and the history of that? Because you gave that to me on our initial call, and it was pretty fascinating. Would you go into that a bit?
Well, there's a website called the Coulee Corridor, and you can get on that. And it's my son is right now remodeling that website, but that's about the flood or in the trail that they're building. But anyway, this is the largest area documented for a flood on Earth that you can actually document the existence of the flood. And in a period of about 48 hours, over 500 cubic miles of water flowed through eastern Washington. And it did that in around 39 different times. But you can see the different layers from the different floods and the effects in some of these gravel pits and these diggings that they have. So what we have is there's a Lake Missoula, which was formed roughly in the, the area. I don't remember the name of that river, but it goes through Missoula, Montana. And there were ice dams, and they broke, and that's where the floodwaters came. And they drained out in like 48 hours. And they claim here, right where I live, at Dry Falls, that the noise from that fall can be heard over 100 miles away. That's how powerful it was. So what I'm telling is that if anybody's familiar with Steiner's work and
Rudolf Steiner?
Rudolf Steiner, and who did you say that wrote the book? Begins with Schoenberger? Schoenberger, yeah. Anyway, with that big of a flood and that much material moving in the vortex that that water created, it created a lot of charged up material and it created a lot of different molecular structures. And that's probably the biggest reason that these sands have been unable to do anything with them, because they're in such a complex state that they can't be worked with very easily.
So one of the things that you said to me, Doug, was is you thought that was the reason why the ore machine makes from the sands is so potent and charged.
It is. In my mind, of course, you don't know what theory is, but from what I've read and studied, I think that and the fact that there's so many different elements involved in these materials. So
is an ionic charge?
Well, it's just the combination of the bonds and then the combination of the energy that's from the flowing water that is in part.
Okay, good.
But I'm sure that there's other, like the ocean, as the thing, as the wave action and the different currents and everything in the ocean, that's the way that gets charged up also.
So how do you apply this understanding to the manufacture of your armor?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Okay, well, we're gonna go there.
I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah, okay. Listen, we need to go there. Listen, one thing that a couple of members were curious about was your 30 years of experience in research. Because one member said, oh, well, that's way before Hudson, as if Hudson was the beginning and the be on the end or of the whole Ormus thing. What precipitated your inspiration of the whole Ormus area thing?
Well, I'm 57 years old. My dad used to have a sand and gravel business. He used to dig and deliver. And in these sand pits, I always was playing in the sand, and I could always see the shiny stuff in the sand. And everybody said, it's just magnetite, and it's iron and everything. Well, if it's iron, why is it so shiny? And why doesn't it tarnish? And so I started, you know, I guess I was argumentative back when I was six, seven years old.
Where'd you put my feet?
You know, and so it's been a product, I don't know, of my critical thinking, I guess you said. But I've always wondered what was in these sands that you couldn't melt them, you can't get the metals out of them, and yet you know they're in there. You could spectrograph them and get certain readings one time, and then you couldn't get readings another time. So all you have, when you have many different minerals together, you have interfering frequencies, and they wipe each other out. You can't get an honest reading with them. And I think Stephen Michelson has done the greatest work on the spectroscopy to explain that. He also explained that magnetite, while the common formula is Fe3O4, the true formula is XFe3O4. And the X stands for anything above iron in the periodic chart. In other words, any of the platinum group metals, nickel or anything else that's above iron in the chart, even mercury, can substitute in the magnetite structure, and it will read like magnetite.
Wow.
So there's why the explanation of magnetite isn't always magnetite. That came from Stephen Michelson.
Hello?
He did a lot of work in the South Africa and for the platinum industry, and I believe that his father was the one that did the Michelson, I guess it's Michelson Murray or something like that, light test at the University of Chicago. You can look him up in the encyclopedia.
And so once you started being fascinated with this area of the spark on the shiny sands and the magnetite and so on, what was the bridge that got you to cross the Ormus aspect of these metals?
Well, I guess it was that when I related to you when we were just plugging up our filters with that darn stuff, because it plugs filters pretty good. And we were trying to figure out what was causing it, but when I got it on that injury and it healed it up so fast, like, that's when the team, he took off with the idea. That's where that went. I didn't really do anything with it myself. I was still stumbling around trying to get the metal to come down.
So when you say it was plugging up the filters, I'm trying to get a visual of that. What sort of filters?
Well, just regular standard paper filters, and cloth filters, and percolated beds, and all. And we tried everything. But this Ormus, which is the colloidal, is the perfect definition of a colloidal. It comes down like a jelly. And it splits stuff up.
I've heard references to this jelly quite a bit, and I haven't experienced it yet.
You really haven't?
No, seriously, I haven't. I've only experienced precipitate and white powdered gold, but I haven't experienced it. I've heard lots of conversations about and I've seen a little bit of oiliness on some of my batteries, just on the surface, but nothing that would even slightly resemble a gel. Now, apparently this is quite common when you're doing trap work that quite often is a goop that develops.
Yeah. If you come out of the caustic solution with an acid, you're going to get a gel. If you have colloidals in it, that's the definition of it. That's basically one of the proofs of a colloidal.
Okay.
And so once you started seeing this group, this gel, what was going through your curiosity, your mental faculty? What were you kind of guessing? What were you aiming at?
I was guessing because I was wanting to get a black precipitate of platinum. Or gold or purple caches or anything but that gel.
It's like you were just going up the middle, it's not after the gel, but you ended up with the gel?
Right.
Yeah.
And not once, almost all the time.
So you could say, giving a bit of metaphysical stretch here, that the gel was kind of like insisting to be created and forcing itself on you.
It was forced on me, that's for sure.
Well,
sure wasn't.
Did you say you were doing that 30 years ago?
Well, yeah, in the 1970s.
Have you aged at all?
You were encountering this buildup of gel whenever you were doing some processing.
Oh, I was trying to get platinum and gold out.
And you just didn't know what you had at that time, right?
No, it's messing everything up.
Very interesting.
It just made a mess out of everything.
So your first thing, this was some kind of a byproduct that you just wanted to get rid of then?
We threw it out by the bucket for it. Matter of fact, after that, we had to change our process. We went to what I call a Mikey solution, because a Mikey would eat anything. It was a combination of sulfuric acid, salt, water, thiourea, urea, and a lot of electricity. And I mean, that stuff would eat anything. And put out clouds of poison, too. But that worked. But then I got involved with USRDC, which is actually the current president's uncle, the former president's brother, Seth Scott Bruce III, and he was in Henderson, Nevada, with a company called United States Resource Development Corporation. And they were interested in my black sands, but they were checking out 29 palms before me. And I helped them prove that the 29 palms people were fraud. Anyway, Prescott.
You down, down in California?
Yeah. A guy by the name of Palmer, I do believe, was in that. But anyway, to make a long story short, after they lost about, I think they lost about 1.2 million, and they decided to get out of the metal business. And that's when Prescott Bush went over to Hong Kong. I don't know if he went to Hong Kong or somewhere in China, he's building golf courses and resorts. But anyway, that left me high and dry. The work that I had done and all these sands that I separated for them, and that went by the wayside because after they discovered that fraud, he got out of the business. So I was left with these buckets of sands that I produced. That's what I'm still using today. That was back in the 80s.
Here it sounds. Can you hear me? Hello.
So when you
he
when
can't
you
hear you
accidentally got some of this on your wound and realized that it had extreme healing power, then you took more interest in this gel.
No, I didn't, but my partner did.
Yeah. Well, what can you tell us about the Essene?
I don't know, just, I've known him since probably 1971, and we've worked a lot together, and I think very highly of him. He's a good friend, but in the last 3 or 4 years, he doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody, so to speak. So I haven't had contact with him, so I'm not, I don't know, I don't talk about him.
I mean, is he like a spiritual person, or is he very just very technical?
He's just a regular person, like anybody else.
Okay.
So, I
we all have our question. What were the qualities that you would ascribe to the esteem?
They can't hear you.
That you got in this group, there was a 14th step upon you, Doug? Well, I think he had some friends that had some physical healing that he had done, and that were sick with disease and everything, and I think he was sick himself, and he used it. And I think coming, you know, from a lot, he did a lot more risky chemical things with. And he got pretty sick, and I think he used the cloidal, or whatever you want to call them, ornaments. I think he used them to heal himself up there.
So you're saying when he healed himself, he suddenly got the bug and decided to start introducing to other people?
Well, I think he was introducing them to other people while he was healing himself, too.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I can't speak. You're going to have to get a hold of him and talk to him about it.
Yeah, well, like you said, he's
I just got bits and pieces. You know, I'd go up and visit him, and well, I can't really say what was going on in his life because we were going back and forth, and I've always been trying to get a flow sheet developed for my place, and
well, what do you think is the future of this Ormus stuff? Do you think anybody will ever figure out exactly what it is?
I don't think we'll ever figure out what anything is ourselves, actually. I don't think we have a clue. I think we have a very limited insight into what exists in this world. We have a very limited frequency that we can see. We have a very limited frequency we can hear, and we can feel, and we can build instruments that can tell us in our frequency a lot of what's going on, but it doesn't even, it's just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. Right now, I think they have discovered over 100 subatomic particles or more, and what's next?
You know, that one of the things that you said to me in our initial conversation was, and I love this quote, the sicker you are, the harder the stuff will to heal you.
Well, when you are in misery and basically dying and things aren't working good for you, it's hard to concentrate on healing now, isn't it? And if you get yourself started, put back together and get the feeling better, you can focus better.
That's a really interesting observation, because what you're saying here is that the healing is a subject of focus.
Well, it has to be, or there wouldn't be 28% of placebos having the healing effect, and that's documented by the medical profession. In other words, when they take the pill, they're focusing on healing themselves, and even though the pill is nothing but sugar water or whatever, they heal up, but it's the fact that they're focusing that thing that, does the trick. And that's the problem I have with people taking dormant. They'll take it and I'll ask them, well, how are you doing on the, how's the salt doing for you? Well, I haven't taken it lately. Well, how are you feeling? Well, I'm not feeling good right now. I'm not doing as good as I was. I said, you know, you wonder when the light bulb's going to come on with these people, but some of them it never does. So I really have problems with people that say they're sick, but some of them, I don't know, I think they want to be sick or something. They don't tune into their body. They don't ask the basic questions of their health.
That's a particularly acute observation.
It does,
and I think you're really right on the money.
Doug,
yeah,
can you
hear
me?
I don't know.
And I think I quoted this in one of my emails. It builds up your aura so that you can focus and heal. How do you think it builds up your aura, Doug?
The energy transfer that it carries. The processes that it helps to facilitate that your body needs to build its hormones and its enzymes and antibodies. And it all takes these different minerals and energies to do this with. And I think it just adds to the availability of these minerals to facilitate the antibodies and hormones and enzymes.
Can I ask a question?
What I'd like to do is
they cannot hear us.
Thank you.
Now, what you can hear in our guest does is a man who thinks that he doesn't have anything to say. So Doug said that he was a little bit nervous about this call when he first came on, and most of you guys went on. And as you can hear, Doug is, from my point of view, a very knowledgeable and interesting man to listen to. And so, listen, any questions you have about what Doug has said so far, why don't you type up now and ask Doug.
Can they hear me?
One question.
No, they can't.
Who you are and where you're from.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't lose. How does your material travel well?
Oh, it's, I had it tested one time down at Hanford, the nuclear reservation here in Washington, and it had the highest cross-sectional density for neutron absorption of any material they ever tested. So it's loaded with a lot of metals. And you mean for shipping and shipment?
Yeah.
I just ship it in 5-gallon buckets. It's dry when I ship it. I dry it when I grind it. If they want it ground and if they want just the pure black sand, then I just dry it before I put it in the bucket. I don't want to sell them water, and I don't think if to work with, I think you want to start out dry so you get your measurements right.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure if you guys are seeing up the same page in the hymn book here, because one thing you haven't mentioned yet, Doug, is that you actually sell this black sand. And you also sell the almond. Were you just talking about selling? Were you just talking about shipping the black sand?
Right.
And I think I may be wrong, Lou, but were you talking about how does the almond ship? Was that the question you were asking?
Yeah. A lot of the other products,
I've never had any never had any problems with it that I know of. And I basically, maybe I'm just ignorant of it, but it's, I've had good results from all that I've shipped to people. But I just put them in a brown bottle, a little brown bottle. It's a little half-ounce bottle, which I'm running. I'm going to have to find a source for those now.
So in what shape does your ormus come? In what form does your ormus come, Doug?
It's a ground-up powder, kind of off-color cream, kind of a cream color, kind of a pink almost. It's a cream to brown pink, kind of. The finer you grind it, the whiter it gets.
So it's a salt like powder, Doug?
Right, I dry it completely. It's just like a salt.
I want some. Okay, I'm sending some money to you. How much do I need to send?
Well, it's $50 for a half ounce, and I've been asked for $3 for shipping, and then when I find out how much it is, I just put whatever's left over back in the envelope and I send it back.
Okay, that's shipping. Right. And listen, would you give us your address right now, that if people want to have some of this magic powder, they can send you a check?
Sure. Doug Port, D-O-R-S-T, 10-730, Road 37, Northeast. Cooley, C-O-U-L-E-E, City, Washington, W-A, 99115, USA.
I'll just repeat that. What I got was a back force that at 10730 Road, 37 Northeast, Cooley City, WA99115 in the US.
Correct.
Okay, cool. And what's your phone number there, Doug?
It's better than you did on the email.
Okay. Alright.
I just hope that, No, I help people out. I'm not trying to be. There's things about this process that I'm still working on, and so you know, I don't know. I have guys telling me about magnetic fields and frequencies and the basic.
Mute your phone.
With the, trying to keep it as simple as I can, but I do stir it for a long time. I've had it up to 2 months, and I take some out, and I precipitate, I add water back, and I keep adding back the wet settles, and I add it back in, and I stir, and so I just keep drawing on it, and I limit myself to how many times I extract the salt out, so the salt and the colloidal come out with the salt. The basic
theory
is
that...
What?
The chemical process then.
Yeah, it's just the caustic soda solution to start out with. Stir it forever, and then as I settle it and precipitate it. But what I'm thinking is, you know, the grinding and the stirring, and there's different points that I do different things. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And I have to go by, I go a lot of by feeling. Like last night, I walked out and the moon was shining, and just at a certain position, it gave me an idea, and I went back in and I checked it, and I had to add some more chemicals. So there's a lot of intuition in this too, and I wish I could leave it alone sometimes because it's kind of confusing.
Tell me about it. I know about that.
I just don't want to ever cause anybody to problem with it.
This line is now muted.
Yeah, one of the things you said to me a few times, Doug, is you've tried to stop having this passion and it keeps coming back and revisiting you. And it cost you a wife and half a life, and just won't leave your phone.
Pretty much.
And,
I'm kind of a recluse around this area, and eccentric, and whatever you want to label a guy that pretty well keeps to himself, and I don't know, I just can't leave it alone. I wish it. And I don't work that hard at it. I go a long time before a lot of this stuff comes to me. And I work on other things. It takes a long time.
And so far, have you noticed that you tend to do things in accord with the phases of the moon, Doug? I know I do.
Well, call it the phases of the moon, but I go on how I'm feeling. And I sometimes, if you take the phases of the moon to rule that, I guess that's what it is. But I think there's a lot of things that are governing besides the phases of the moon. I think the phases of our seasons, our sun and moon combination, the astrological position of the planets, the stars, maybe how I'm feeling.
How did you come to that conclusion? Just by trial and error?
I beat my head against the wall and just did any mistakes. I finally figured out that maybe you better just let it happen. And it works a hell of a lot better if you lose it.
I mean, you at some point realized that just doing the same thing over and over again didn't always happen, so you more or less started correlating what you were doing to what time of the month you were doing it?
Well, I don't... Yeah, but I don't pay... Actually, I go almost totally on instinct. I don't look at the calendar or the full moon or anything like that. I just go on intuition of what I feel needs to be... It'll just come to me and I can't believe it. One time I'll do one thing and it won't work, and the next time I do it, it just falls into place. But it's just because it's the right time.
Well, I sometimes talk a lot about intention. And do you think that your state of mind or the intention that you have or the desire plays a part in what you do?
It has everything to do with it. That's the reason the same people that can take the same process and not do anything with it is because their intent is wrong. They want to steal it, or they have the wrong idea with it. They can't do it. I've had several people that I've known like that. And intention has everything to do with it.
Well, I would agree with you very much. I found the same thing. And, you know, for example, I have some people over here, and you know the Chinese are probably the best violators of any kind of proprietary rights. And so I constantly have people who are very interested in what I do here. And, you know, they gradually get a few things out of me, and I tell them some things, but then they come back to me and say, I did just what you said, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
What are you hiding? What are you hiding? And I say, I'm not hiding anything.
Your intention is
I can't get it to work. And I said, well, that's not my problem. So yeah, I agree with you very much, Doug, that intention, what you plan to do or what your intention of doing with this product have an awful lot to do with the effect of the product once you have derived it.
And the funny part about this is I've had people accidentally show up here, and I haven't in the last 10 years, but 10 years ago there were some people in the government really interested. I was dealing with people at NASA and stuff like that, and there were people showing up, and they were disguising themselves, and I could tell who they were. Finally, I got one of them that did one day that was sent around here to New York to check on what I was doing. But the thing about it is, when you live, I guess when you live honestly, it's pretty easy to see somebody that's trying to pull something.
Very true.
And if someone shows up and no one had the intention that you two gentlemen have, they will not be able to duplicate the stuff that you duplicate that is a product of that very intention, right?
Right. But not only that, too, but that most people don't have the patience you have to have. I've also done quite a bit of work with induction furnaces. I found that the guy was trying to use my furnace. I leased it out to the company, and I was doing the work for him. And then when I'd go home at night, he'd hire his lab assistant, and him would come back and run my furnace. They finally blew it up, but they were trying to find out how I was getting the results I was getting, and they never did, but it was because of their intention.
Yeah.
You know, I've had this experience too. Sometimes I've let processes run on their own, and I've left the house and I've gone away somewhere while it was running, and when I come back, nothing happened. But it started happening again when I came back. Have you ever had any experiences like that?
Oh yeah. And then I've had them go wrong when I got depressed and things that I shouldn't have been depressing, you know. The high-frequency furnace is the best case of that. You have to let things happen in that when you're fluxing and trying to bring these metals down. But I had some fantastic results, but the fact that when I was involved with USRDC, there was a man by the name of Fritz Wandenberg, great man, but he had his own process called Stelvol process, which is what you call a nascent chlorine process, and it worked with, but the only problem was that chlorine would eat everything up that was around it, and so it would only run for a short period, and then you'd have to rebuild everything because the chlorine ate it all up. But anyway, when I got involved, like, he was pushing his process to the extent that they wouldn't look at my work. But I was getting real good assays out of things that I did, but they were interested in this other process, and that's the reason I lost out. But it had to do with ego and intent.
Well, you know, it goes back to the old...
There's a fascinating piece of information here, Doug, because effectively you're saying that your good and the ormus and the whole metaphysical area is a result of both application of scientific knowledge and metallurgical knowledge and precipitation knowledge, but also the attention itself of you, the being.
That's right.
And so, you know, I remember reading these books by Carlos Castaneda about 30 years ago and going, what the hell is he talking about when he's talking about intention? And so if you were to encapsulate in a sentence or so how you increase your intention, have you had any thoughts on that?
Well, you just have to get out of your own. You have to have emulate the other person, and you have to see what's walking in shoes, I guess. There's been so many songs and ballads and rhymes and whatnot, and you know that to bring that out. But you have to pay attention to what's needed and care, and basically mean it. You know, it's not just try to get rich over it or get notoriety.
Is the connection between tightening orbit and inclusive attention?
Well, I think the Ormus just helps your bodily functions and improves your energy and everything. But you have to work at intention. It's not something that is there. It's something you have to cultivate. You have to want to help. Most of the greater inventors never benefited from their inventions.
I term it, you have to be vulnerable.
Right.
You have to be open and willing, and that just takes a certain amount of vulnerability. You cannot think that you are doing this, that it's something that's given to you, and that it's a gift, and you have to treat it with great care. And you can never feel like, hey, I did this, because you didn't do it. There are much greater forces going on. Maybe you're only a vessel, and maybe steering some of the processes, but you didn't create them. And you cannot actually ever really control them. You can just become harmonic with them. In other words, your own personal harmony has a lot to do with the results you get.
You have a quote with that, Doug?
Yeah, you got to let it happen. At its own rate, in its own way. You just got to look and try to go with what the signs tell you.
And you know, that's so different than the business philosophy of most people. And that, you know, I guess the American saying is make it happen. And you cannot approach alchemy in that thought. You've got to let it happen, just like you say. You prepare and let things happen rather than try to make them happen.
They actually chose me. I don't figure them out. They show me.
Yes, I agree with you. I very much agree with you. You know, I mean, the alchemists of old, the ancient alchemists, have been saying that, you know, for a millennia. But people just can't fall into it. That, you know, it will happen if you let it happen. But if you try to force it or make it happen, it won't happen.
They're too busy trying to pay their taxes and their mortgages and their credit cards and their house and boat and all their goodies and everything, and they haven't got time to look at anything that's going on or figure out what they need to do to make something work. You know, go to Walmart and buy it. That's about as far as they go. God forbid it, givers.
We got carried away. We're only taking one other question. And so I'd like to ask if there's anyone else who wants to ask any more questions, particularly in the free room. Let's have a question or two from the free room. Go ahead. Anyone wants to ask a question?
I have a quick question. This is Pete, New Hampshire.
Hi, Pete.
Doug, I know that Don Nance uses black sand to make an elixir he calls the White Dove. Are you familiar with that?
I don't know what he makes or anything, but I know I sold him sand.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure it must be your spam, but he thinks it comes out, or I think he says it comes out something like 64% rhodium, 19% gold, and about 15% iridium, using this tent. And I was wondering, I mean, is that anywhere near what you think you might have up there by the time you're done?
Well, in my black sands, I have assays, you know, and I've had a USRDC, and actually it's the Beckman Industrial, and they had their documentation of the osmium, iridium, rhodium, platinum, palladium, ruthenium, and rhenium, tungsten, chromium, all of the different metals are in there. But
well, I mean, at the end of the day, with your product, is it you believe it's heavy in rhodium, as the way Don comes out, very heavy in rhodium, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, well, I have no idea. I really don't. I'm just
okay,
going on
thanks.
I'm going on the premise that as it comes out in a salt, that it's going to be amenable to the human body because that basically we come out of the ocean.
Thanks.
So you're saying the assays you have are on the sand before you process that?
Right.
So you know the metals are in there, but they precipitate out through your processing and become
right.
The salt.
And I don't know what proportions they are in the salt. I've never tested the salt, to be honest with you.
Well, I don't think you can test it. I mean, I'm not sure you could ever know what it is.
I don't think it needs to be tested because people all like it. I have not had one complaint on it. And if they don't like it, don't take it.
Now, when you take it, do you mix it with water or do you stick it under your tongue when it comes in a powder form from you?
I have different people. I don't know. That's an individual thing that people have to decide for themselves. I don't want to sit here and tell people how to, because all I can basically tell them is to use it as a bath water, and for a, you know, for a mineral salt for bath water. I don't want to say to take it by mouth or anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, now, are there any other questions? Pick it from the free room before you guys are out of time.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, any questions from the benefactor's room? I don't think it was.
I'd like to make sure that I have his email address correct.
Go ahead.
Would you give us your email address? What
was it? Small case. D as in dog. D as in Paul. Underline. B as in boy. O as in order. R. That. S. Ship. T as in toy.
Okay, at yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com, right.
Okay.
And I guess it's because of this email that I haven't heard some people trying to email me. There's a lot of them today that they've been trying to email me, and I haven't been getting them.
Well, I'm going to resend. I just looked it up, and I got the one I had previously sent to you, and so I'm going to resend that one to you from Hong Kong.
Okay, because, you know, I went to your website after, and I sent back an email to you, the only one I got, and I sent one back, and I never did hear from you again. I just figured that you were going to Tibet getting sand or something.
Well, I'm looking at the email I sent you previously, and the one response I got from you, and it said, something about you weren't going to tell me the process, but also, let's see, to write you back, which I did, And then I never heard back from you. And then I sent that a second time. I forwarded it to you a second time, and I didn't hear back then either. So I'll resend it. And if you get something from Calvin Howard, you'll know you're talking to me in Hong Kong.
All right.
Let me just interject here for a moment, and I'm standing in front of my astrological calendar, and it's a moon planting guide that these guys in Australia publish. It's a really handy thing to have on the door of your laundry. And this one shows that the full moon is on our Tuesday morning at 11:25 a.m., and which is a new Wednesday afternoon at, let me see, 11 plus 6, that's 5 p.m. So, that will be your Monday. Yeah, one day ahead. And so the full moon coming up in a couple of days, for those of you who like to collect your ocean water, those of you who are close to the ocean, I always collect my ocean water to do my precipitation. Just as the moon is waxing, coming up to full strength, and so I'll post the list to you guys, the exact time of full moon, and it's better to get it when it's still coming to power.
Dennis?
Yes, mate.
Can you tell them a little bit about my astrology? It's kind of fascinating to me, but it sure hit the mark.
Well, I could, except that I'd have to go up to my office and boot it up. But one thing I remember telling you, and that is that actually a deeply sensitive soul who's also likes to start things and create things, and that you are very intuitively inclined, which makes you a natural inventor, you know, despite yourself, and somewhat of a visionary, which is kind of like, which made me laugh, you know, Doug, because you kept saying to me, including even on this call at the beginning, that you didn't feel like you had anything to say. And I've heard quite a lot that you've said that I think is worth listening to. and I thank you so much for being on this call, because it's been valuable for me and the rest of the community.
Well, you know, I've always felt that if everybody sit down and tried to solve a problem or work on a problem every day, that the world would be a hell of a lot better off than it is today. That people just get a I need want, but they don't try to solve or help other people's problems. And I just wish that we could find a way to help people get involved in problems. If we spent one-tenth of the money we spend blowing things up that we spend on trying to fix things or solve problems, we'd be a lot better off.
That makes good sense. Can you hear me now?
Anyone else got any further questions of our guest of the day, Doug Bort, from Washington? Washington State, that is.
Dennis?
Come on, there's got to be some Q&A people out here.
I'll let Lou and Foose on again, but Doug, have you looked into the Brown's gas welding subject, which is sort of pharmacy?
I've got some videotapes of that. Actually, I did the videotape of the welding at UCLA, or not UCLA, at University of California, Davis campus. I did the demonstrations for the welding there.
That is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Another voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Y'all heard that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Who is that?
Janine in Mandeville.
Hi, Janine.
And I thought I was... time. I thought I was automatically muted.
Yeah, well, you have a we managed to hear all that. And now that you've introduced yourself, tell us what you thought of the call so far from a, just a, our listener's point of view.
I don't know. I think listening in, it's another product. Do I need to try that one too? Or I'm currently drinking Danae's water. I was just sipping it while I've been listening to the conversation. It's all fascinating to me. I still haven't had a deduction yet.
Danae's water is great, isn't it?
Janine, this is Hong Kong talking to you. Thank you for sending me the pictures of my daughters.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Glad you got them.
Yeah.
They told me about.
For those that don't know, Janine went and met my two daughters that sell our teas in near New Orleans in Louisiana. She's from Mandeville, Louisiana.
Yes, and your daughter Amy is so lovely. Well, both Cherie and Amy are. And I've met your son, too, the older son.
Oh, okay, good.
But I want to get Amy to come with me, take a road trip to the Gulf to get some water, make our own armor.
Okay, take her with you. She's getting more and more.
Yeah,
I just sent her a box of stuff, so she's got some armor from here, some of the Tibetan gold armor. To
her
get her to share it with
shop
you.
Is an ideal place. Oh, yeah, she told me some of your products were coming. Yeah, I look forward to that. All right, sorry to interrupt y'all. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, that's not an interruption. Right. That's a lovely feedback, and I'm pleased that you're able to join the call.
It's just like a family.
I have been very much so. Thank you, darling.
Listen, while you're talking, is it true that you actually have a part of an internet radio and do interviews?
I was, very much like what you're doing, and you're doing a great job, Dennis. Thank you so much for enthusiastically promoting these programs. I think they'll grow in listenership. I did, until a couple of months ago, have a radio program called Jupiter's Girl, and I brought all manner of metaphysical pioneers on, including Barry Carter, who was on the show one day. It's very exciting.
Excellent.
And for now, I'm glad to be part of the audience. I'm glad to give up that hat of moderating of an interview.
Well, it's lovely to have you on the call. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Does anyone else have any questions for Doug, our guest of the day on Live Alchemy?
Can you hear me, Dennis?
One more question. How do I mute this again? Just so you don't hear all the background noise you have.
You should be able to hit star 6, and that should do it. If you hit star 6, then say something, and we'll know if you've done it successfully.
Okay, I'll call my daughter again. Okay.
Any other questions for Doug, our guest of the day? No? Hey, Barry, are you on the call?
I'm on, but you can't hear me.
Barry Carter.
You can't hear me.
I must have put them all to sleep.
It's unlikely. Barry, are you on the call?
I am, but you can't hear me.
Maybe Barry is muted, and we can't hear him. Maybe he's speaking right now, and we just can't hear him.
That's true. I'm muted, and you can't hear me. Hello?
What I'm wanting Barry to do is to announce the winner of the raffle this month.
Can you hear me? Hello.
So he's not, you're not hearing from him. I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll announce the winner of the raffle by email to the list. And Barry can let me know who was the winner of that. Now it's an hour and a half now, and so unless there's any further questions, I'm quite happy to wind the call up, because I think I've had almost an overdose dose of information. It's been a fabulous, it's been an info fest, Doug, and I really appreciate you participating in this call as our guest. And but even though you said you didn't have anything to say, I've heard a lot.
Well, I've learned a lot from the questions, and I appreciate the people, and the input that they've had has helped me immensely.
Well, Doug, this is Sig Verda in Hong Kong. I'm going to be signing off now, but it's very nice to make your acquaintance over the phone, and I've forwarded an email to you, and the check will be in the mail in the next day or so. It's Sunday over here.
Yeah, and I'll be happy to do anything I can for you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
See you, mate. So listen, if there's anyone else who wants to ask any questions before we wind the call up, go right ahead. Otherwise, you don't speak up now, forever hold your peace. And our next call will be in a couple of weeks, will be the mid-month call. And it's more than likely going to be Deb of Maine and Jesse of Santa Fe, and they do a lot of research into the qualities and the properties of ormus kinesiologically by dousing and testing, and they come up with some fascinating stuff about the personality of ormus. The metaphysical aspects of ormus that Sig Verda and I have tested. So listen, there's a couple people leaving now, and we can just wind up the call. And thank you very much for being on the call, Doug. And by the way, before you go, just say who you are and goodbye to Doug, and thank you very much. And then we'll just end it up right now.
Bye, Doug. Thanks. Pete.
Pete, thank you.
If I unmuted, then goodbye from Janine in Mandeville.
Did I? Goodbye, Janine.
Thanks.
Thanks, Janine.
This is Tim in Oklahoma. Thank you very much, Doug.
Well, it's nice you could join us.
Doug, this is Rose in London. I missed most of your call, unfortunately, but good to meet you.
Do you have any questions? Email.
We'll be able to review that.
What was that? I'm sorry.
It'll be recorded, Rose, and be able to review that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Dennis, will you be sending out the link to where the recordings are?
Yes. And if you email me to expand@ozmail.com.au, I'll reply with those links.
That would be wonderful. I hope you had a great call anyway. Sounds like it was good.
It was great, yeah. Thank you.
Cool. All right, guys. Thank you very much.
See you, Rose. Good night, darling.
Bye.
It's midnight for you, isn't it? So that's it from us, guys. Thank you very much for being on the call. I'm signing off now.